We are living in a second age of efficiency. Journalists and entrepreneurs do not use that word as often as they used to. We'll see synonyms later, but never far from our minds is consciousness of the value of getting the greatest possible output from available inputs, whether increasing production or profits or reducing time. My claim that preoccupation with efficiency in the short term may harm efficiency in the long run risks being considered a heresy by some and a truism by others. I hope to show that it is an obvious proposition when one reflects on it. It is also obvious, as I shall suggest in succeeding chapters and in the conclusion, that combining efficient algorithms with holistic, analog understanding can produce far better results than using either strategy alone. But it is not always simple to defend the obvious. It is helpful to see efficiency as a concept that has developed over the past 200 years or so, and as a set of practices that are much older. The idea of efficiency, as we shall see, emerged in the age of the steam engine and was best expressed not by the 18th century metaphor of a shop's division of labor, essential as that remained, but by the substitution of continuous production for the fabrication of one unit at a time. The greatest enterprises invested vast capital and employed up to 100,000 workers or more to keep it in operation. Both classical economic liberalism and rival doctrines like Marxism reflected this model. It should not be so surprising that even communist governments admired Western mass production. The importance of technologies of uninterrupted, continuous process, as opposed to batch production, was first underscored by the Swiss architect and critic Siegfried Gideon and the American historian Daniel J. Boorstin in the mid-20th century. Rollers, belts, and other devices changed the nature of consumption as well as production. Cable television programs like How It's Made reveal how much of today's industrial processes are already automated, especially when compared to episodes of the Industry on Parade series broadcast on network television in the 1950s. Today's programs will probably look equally quaint in even less time. But further reducing labor costs on assembly lines is not the kind of efficiency that interests us here. It is a new kind of enterprise that has, unforeseen by even the boldest futurists, taken over what Vladimir Lenin called the commanding heights of the economy, dominating its agendas. Silicon Valley evokes the mixture of admiration, fear, and scorn once inspired by the grimy industrial metropolises of the Northeast and Midwest. But while an approach to Chicago or Detroit or Pittsburgh by automobile or train can still be a visually striking experience, nothing on the peninsula south of San Francisco is tall enough to inspire awe, stupendous as its wealth has become. The server complexes of its companies are scattered as inconspicuously as possible around the globe. Yet the giants of Silicon Valley have ideas about social organization as radical in their own way as Lenin's, and they share with classical communism a passionate faith in efficiency. This chapter will investigate the contrast between continuous process efficiency, which fascinated painters as well as photographers and filmmakers in its monumentality and awesome concreteness, and platform efficiency, which is far more profitable, but concealed and evanescent, and that takes a leap of artistic imagination to dramatize. It will suggest how matchmaking by electronic networks takes advantage not only of the steady, if recently slowed, improvement of the efficiency of integrated circuits, but also of the ability of ingenious computational techniques, algorithms, to multiply the speed of these circuits manifold. This efficiency raises a profound question, the chapter will argue. Why have these platforms apparently had such little effect on the self-perceived satisfaction of the United States and other nations in which they are most advanced? Why are citizens around the world so unhappy with their governments, so ready to look to extreme solutions? One reason may be that the platform revolution has been diverting talent and capital from other technological projects that could be more transformative. I cannot identify them, nor rule out that they are already well advanced and may flower soon. After all, the U.S. boom after the Second World War was in part based on innovations like broadcast television and dry photocopying that actually were under development during the darkest years of the Great Depression, along with Alan Turing's theoretical work that helped make the platform economy possible.